Higher Education Administration from the University of Texas at Austin. Kyle has been teaching for us this year and has got a wonderful program, so please welcome Kyle Clark.
Thank you and good morning. The two people that have had coffee said good morning. Y'all doing okay this morning? Okay, so nobody is sitting in the front row except for a few of you. Okay, all right. Don't worry, I ask questions of people that sit in the back, so you don't have to worry about that. It's a pleasure to be here, and this is my first time to Midland, Odessa. And if you heard from my bio, I am from Oklahoma. It's kind of hard to get that out in Austin because people think of the school first, but I got here as fast as I could. And I've been in Texas or in Austin for 8 years, and again, appreciate this opportunity to talk briefly about cultural competency. So hopefully you have the PowerPoint in front of you and your binders, and there's also two handouts that we are going to work with in a little bit, so you'll definitely need something to write with. And it is my hope that in the next hour and 15 minutes, maybe we'll get done a little early, that I can keep you all engaged. This is usually that time after breakfast, but before lunch, where we start to kind of drift away in our workspaces and wonder why is the day moving so slowly. Anyone else experience that in their workday? Okay. So it'll be important that I stay as lively as possible. So please continue to crack open cans, drink your coffee, whatever you need to do to be comfortable. And I see Big Red in the back. I learned about Big Red, founded in Waco, Texas. And it is a blend of lemon and vanilla oils that they added to the cream soda recipe to develop Big Red. And so it started in Waco, Texas. I learned that last week when we were observing Juneteenth, for those of you that know what that's all about. So we're going to go quickly over some learning objectives. And I have to remember to stay away from this side of the room for feedback, so I put this in front. And so I may move around in front of the projector, and I apologize if that is distracting. Again, we want to look at our best ways or best practices to understand our work and the work environment in relation to cultural competency, gain some deepened personal understanding of diversity issues, also be in tune with the areas that we need to work on. One of the things that I don't like about diversity presenters is when they kind of do the finger pointing. This is what you're not doing, and this is what you need to do. My context will be this is what we all need to do and continue to work on so that we can understand diversity issues a little bit more in the context of cultural competency, which is sometimes difficult to say really quickly. Cultural competency. We'll work with that. And also to share your own experiences that you all have in your different workspaces. How many of you identify as coming from a small city or a small town in the courts that you all are in? Okay. How many of you come from the larger cities, Dallas, Fort Worth area, Houston area? Okay, just a few. So depending on where you work, the city or the town that you work in, that you live in, sometimes the diversity that, you know, a lot of us would like to have isn't there. And that's a reality. And so I think it's also sometimes difficult to understand others when you don't have additional experiences to interact with others. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. Now, what I'm not going to do today is give you a bunch of definitions. What I'm not going to do today is tell you, here's the formula, and if you follow this formula, your life will be perfectly diverse and everything, and all will be well in the world. What I hope to do is to introduce some concepts that make sense and have you translate it to the work environment that you all are in every day. Sometimes in the feedback that we get, there's like, well, how does this kind of relative to my work environment? And I can break down diversity into this idea. Diversity, social justice, cultural competency, excuse me. It involves people and their experiences. And so when we understand that diversity involves people and their experiences, everybody's a part of the conversation. And so that's kind of the path that we're going to take. So again, we're going to explore who wants to work in a better work environment. Any hands? Who wants to work in a better work environment? Now, as your hands go up, it's not saying that you currently work in a bad environment, we hope, right? But it's important that we look at ways to improve where we go to work. How many of you would say you spend the majority of your week in the office, at work. Most of us do. Most of us spend more time at work than we do at home, than we do on vacation, obviously, than we do maybe with the people that we would prefer to be with, family and friends. And so sometimes it's difficult for us to kind of give it our all when our work environment sometimes gets kind of mundane. So we'll talk a little bit about that. This notion that everyone is valued. And I think that oftentimes we may say that, we may want that, we may think it, but we don't always take those action steps to make sure that everybody in our work environment is valued. How many of you are managers in your courts? Okay. So this will be some good information for you all, but also to think about the ways in which you want to be valued and how to kind of step up that conversation and say, this is how I like to be recognized, because we think recognition is important. The commitment to cultural competency, I'm going to give you one definition. That'll be in the next slide or two. And there's only one word from this long slide that I want you all to remember. And then a concept called intent versus impact, which won't be new, but it's something that hopefully is packaged in a different way so that it's creative enough for you all to remember. Okay? So I like quotes. I think quotes are important. Let me move to this side. And I think James Baldwin really summarizes kind of this notion of when we think about diversity, kind of our approach to it, and how sometimes it can be difficult, but then he says, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it's faced. Some of us in our offices need to have a difficult conversation with a coworker. It might be a supervisor, it might be one of your employees, but some of us, there's some tension there. It could be 2 weeks old, it could be 12 years old, right? And we just need to go and have that conversation. And so James Baldwin, who's an author, says, again, nothing can be changed until it's faced. Now, it's not that simple, but this is something to give us some motivation to kind of look into that, okay? So here's the slide on cultural competency. And this is the kind of working definition that we use in the field. And the only thing that I want you all to remember is the word interact. Cultural competency equals interaction. And that's really what I want to push today as something for us to walk away with, that it's important that we get to a point where we're interacting. Now, many of you might think, okay, well, I mean, Kyle, I interact with people all day. So I got that. Check mark. We're done. Not necessarily. It's also about how we interact. And so that's what these bullet points are talking about. The awareness of your own cultural view, who you are, how you identify, whether you identify as a woman or a man, whether you identify as a person of color or a white person, whether you identify as a Christian or someone from another faith. Whatever it is, thinking about your own cultural worldview, also how you were raised, right? The family values that you have, whether you grew up in a large city or a small town. So it's not just about race and gender and religion, it's about other things that encompass our cultural worldview. Also, our attitudes toward cultural differences. So you might have grown up here in Texas in a small town. You might interact with someone that grew up in New York, and they don't seem very patient. Is anyone from New York? All right, let me check the room real quick. They don't seem very patient. Well, let me back up, because I've not been to New York. Chicago. Anyone been to Chicago before? It's this big city in the Midwest. But they don't waste their time. So my mom's from Chicago. We went up last Labor Day weekend, and we went to a new place. I was going to order deep dish pizza. If you haven't been to Chicago, when you go, get deep dish pizza. I suggest Giordano's. I think it's the best. But we just wanted to get a slice, and I was trying to decide between the spinach or the cheese. I took way too long. Way too long. What are you going to have? Not how can I help you. The thing in Texas, we usually say, how can I help? What are you going to have? And as I'm looking at the menu, and I'm standing back, so anyone else can come order, what are you going to have? And then I started fumbling a little bit, right? That little scenario has everything to do with kind of cultural differences. So even in terms of the geography, in terms of where we grow up, I think is also very important. Now, being from Oklahoma or being from Texas and from the South, I kind of slowed her pace a little bit. I smiled. I said, actually, this is my first time here. We're visiting from out of town. Her whole demeanor changed. I think if I were from the city of Chicago and I was taking too long, then maybe that interaction would have ended up differently. Oh, okay, well, where are you all from? We're from Texas. And, of course, as soon as you say Texas, there's all these things that come into people's mind about what Texas is all about, right? Yes. So I've been, when I go out of town, I've been asked, do we ride to work on horses? I've been asked all kind of things. And I say, well, depending on where you are in Texas, that may be the case, but it's not the case for everyone. We have big cities, too. We're also a state of 20 million people, right? So we have a little bit of everything here. Off topic, let me get back on our presentation. The knowledge of different cultural practices. I work at the University of Texas at Austin, 50,000 students, and so clearly we have a great amount of diversity. And a lot of our students will go home for what I call winter break, come back, and then even in the workplace, even with my colleagues, how was your Christmas break? Oh, it was great, you know, went home, saw my folks, this and that. Can't ask that to everybody if not everyone celebrates Christmas. So we have a Jewish population there. We have a Muslim population there. We have a lot of different religious backgrounds that represent our student and our staff and faculty population. So I try to just change my language and ask people, how was their winter break? Now, that's something really, really small or really, really simple that I think, especially if I know someone that doesn't celebrate Christmas, that's something that I can do to just change the paradigm a little bit, because probably 9 times out of 10 they've been asked, how's their Christmas break? And they've probably been asked by people who know that they don't celebrate Christmas. And so that small thing that we can do in our everyday life, and it doesn't mean that myself, who grew up a Christian, is any less Christian. It just means that I'm taking a little bit of time to know someone, and I know that they don't celebrate Christmas, so I ask, how was their winter break? How was their vacation? If I know someone that celebrates Christmas, I can ask them, how was your Christmas break? Y'all see where I'm going with that? So it just really depends on, again, who you're interacting with and kind of what your knowledge is of different cultural practices and how much are we willing to learn that. Now, the other thing is, again, depending on where you are, this might not be something that you deal with on a day-to-day basis. And so I understand that as well. However, how many of you have customer traffic all day? Right? And how many of you have seen your population in your cities and towns change over time, right? So depending on, you might say, well, 99% of the people that I've dealt with in the 15 years I've been in this office, you know, are all Christian and they all celebrate Christmas. So I'm asking, how was their Christmas break? And I understand that. But it just depends. You might have someone new that moves into town and you want to be able to reach people, to serve people, and to kind of meet people where they're at. Again, that's the push that we're going for. And also some of our cross-cultural skills. So diversity is not just we're going to go to a Chinese restaurant, or we're going to have a potluck and we're going to ask the one Hispanic in the office to bring enchiladas, right? Now, that may happen, right? But we don't always know how that is received by the person that we're interacting with, and we're going to come back to that later. Any questions so far? Y'all are with me? Anyone bored? It's okay. Anyone bored that's willing to raise their hand and say that they're bored? Okay. So let's go to our first handout so that we can shift and not have you all just listening to me talk. Hopefully, I think it's pink, and it looks like it might be in the very back of your binder. Yeah, it looks like it might be placed in the very back. And so we're looking for the personal identity wheel. So the personal identity wheel is in pink, and it looks like the social identity wheel is in purple, lilac, lavender, whatever works. So let's just deal with the pink sheet first. And what I would like for you all to do, does everyone have one? Okay, what I'd like for you all to do is just to go around the outside of the circle and kind of fill in, as you see fit, answers to those kind of statements or questions. So what's your birth order? I'm the second son, middle child. I came out just fine. Middle child came out just fine. All right, so I would put middle child, I'd put second born. One skill that you're proud of, your favorite color, fill those things out, and then in the middle, you're going to put down 3 adjectives that describe yourself. And that's pretty much it for the instructions. So take a few moments to do that, and we'll come back in just a moment. Everyone, keep your eyes on your own paper. That's a joke, that's a joke.
Let your head down and wear something pretty. Don't you know how you make us both look good? Call your mama.
Exactly. I'm just going through my playlist here.
Tell her we're going out tonight. We're gonna be late. Hey, we might not make it back at all. So take me out to a dance hall. Slap my foot down to the rhythm. Tell them to play them old songs we all love. So tell me that you want me. And I'll tell you that I want you to.
Skipping and a jumping in the misty morning fog with our hearts that thumping and you, a brown eyed girl. And whatever happened to Tuesday and so slow?
Hey, just about another minute to finish up and we'll continue. Okay, let's come back. How many of you are wondering how old I am and why I have such random music? Anyone? Okay. Okay, so what I'd like to do now is have some of you share just two or three of the items on the outer circle and then also one of the adjectives that you just chose to put in the middle. And we want to get some responses from different areas of the room and just kind of see, you know, what folks put down. So I would love to have some volunteers at this time. Anyone want to start? Okay, please.
I'm number 9 of 10 children.
Wow, okay. Anything else?
One skill I most proud of is being a mother.
Okay, absolutely. And I think when we also look at some generational differences, I've had some conferences that I've done where we've had a pretty wide range of age. And I think some of the younger people really respond, 10 children, like, whoa, you know, because it's generationally that's a little bit different, you know. And I think that that's also a part of, you know, what makes us unique and also a part of our diversity, is also looking at the size of our family and what that meant. I'm sure that with 9 brothers and sisters, I'm assuming brothers and sisters, okay, that, you know, you had to share quite a bit. I'm just assuming, you know, maybe so. Right, yeah. You had to, that's why I said had to, right? Okay, good, good. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Okay, favorite music is country. Okay, anything else from the outer circle you want to? Okay, happy person. Now tell me where you're from.
Gonzales.
And then tell me where you're from. I'm sorry. Okay, Lucas. Okay, and where is Lucas at? Help me out. Okay. And Gonzales is southeast of?
17 miles south of Austin.
Okay. Okay. Right. Small town. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Okay. Personal motto. Always wake up happy, never go to bed mad. Does that mean before you go to sleep, sometimes you got to settle some things, depending on... Okay. Good. And then that translates to when you come into work, I'm assuming again, and that you probably interact with people that are like surprised, right? Because, you know, some of us are like, well, I'm not up yet. It's 10:15. What's going on? You know, or I haven't had my coffee yet. You know, we hear those things a lot. And sometimes that's relevant. And then sometimes, you know, if it's 10:15 and you're not up yet, what's going on? I don't know. So I think that's something that kind of really helps as well. Anything, any other adjectives you want to share? Okay, being happy again. So, and again, if that's something that you can have both at work and at home, then I think it's really helpful for, obviously for yourself and your personal wellness, but also for the other people that you interact with. Okay? Anyone else? A few more? Okay? Okay, favorite movie, Monsters, Inc. Anyone else? It's in your top 5, maybe? Okay. I had some responses, so I think it's at least in the top 10. Okay? Okay, self-motivated is one of the adjectives. Anyone else feel like they're self-motivated? Okay, good, good. I saw another hand or two. Okay? Okay, good listeners in the house. Anyone a good listener? Exactly, exactly. And again, good listening is something that I think we also sometimes get feedback on from supervisors and from others. And so it's not necessarily just something that we proclaim for ourselves, but obviously if we get that positive feedback, if a lot of people come to us because they know we listen well, and I appreciate that because we're going to come back to active listening a little bit later in the presentation. Anything else you'd like to share? Okay, very patient. How many of you would like to be more patient than you are? Okay. More patient at work? Hands up. Okay. More patient at home or both? It doesn't matter. Just like to be more patient. Now, I'm just curious, what are some of the things that challenge our patience? Traffic? Children? What else? People don't listen. Okay. So, and what else? The public in general. We are here to serve, but damn it sometimes. You know, you really want... Right? Okay. Okay. Good. Anyone else from this side of the room, in the back, want to share? Okay.
Because
Ah, so they've left their home because there's no one at home that listens well, and they come and find you. And so the rest of you in the office are like, can I help you? There you are. Hey, I'm right here. No, I'll wait. Okay, so that happens a lot too. Okay, so sometimes being a good listener can be a challenge, not a fault because it's not your fault, but it's a challenge because other people do seek out good listeners to tell their life story. So you have, maybe those are, you got to have both, or you should, good listening and patience. Okay. Life stories and yes. Domestic, yes, I understand. Okay. Anyone else before we move on? Okay. So this is also a pretty easy handout that you all can take with you. If anyone wants a electronic copy, I'd be happy to email it. So afterwards, if you'll come up, I'll get your email address. Be happy to send that. I think it's a really good sort of, not an icebreaker, because I know how we feel about icebreakers, but it's a really good staff development opportunity. We'll call it that, right? But something that you can do with your staff. You'd be surprised when you look at your favorite hobby or favorite food, the things that you have in common, but also what differences you all bring to the table. And so maybe next time, how many of you have office potlucks or birthday lunches or something like that? So something from this handout could be really helpful as well. If any of you are gift givers or you do exchanges or anything like that, then this might be also something that's helpful for you all to have as well. So I'd be happy to share that with you all. The next handout that we're going to go over on the purple lavender lilac page is the social identity wheel. Now, I'll give a disclaimer. I don't like disclaimers, but I'm going to go ahead and give one. This one will be a little bit more difficult for a lot of people to do. So now we're going to look at what we call areas of social identity. We're going to look at race. We're going to look at gender. We're going to look at some of the things that you identify with. Also, sometimes the things that we are identified as. And want you all to try to fill those in. We often get questions about physical, emotional, developmental abilities. And so this would be the area where some of our health and wellness comes into play. So for this box, I might put that I have type 2 diabetes, which is different than me putting down I am diabetic, because it doesn't mean that that's all that I am, but that is something that I have. It's part of my family history on both sides. My mom told me probably at the age of 15, any day now. Okay, so I would put down that I have type 2 diabetes. You might put down that you have dyslexia. You might put down that, you know, if you have any type of physical, mental or emotional abilities that you're challenged by, you might put that down. We often get questions between race and ethnicity, okay? And sometimes that's open to interpretation, so I'll give you my interpretation. Race is going to be the broad categories, white, black, Latino, broad categories. Ethnicity gets a little bit more into, so we won't assume that everyone that lives in Texas who identifies as Hispanic or Latino is of Mexican descent. They might be from Cuba, they might be from Honduras, they might be from different places, all right? So ethnicity, they might put down, a person might put down for race Latino, they might put down for ethnicity Cuban American or something like that, okay? Socioeconomic class, you can put down struggling if you want to. But most of us would put down working class, middle class, that sort of thing. And then sexual orientation, if you identify as heterosexual versus homosexual. For your age, you can literally put your age down. Most people don't. So you can put, you know, if you consider yourself a young adult or middle age, that sort of thing. Any other questions, let me know. Let's take a few moments to do that one. And again, eyes on your own paper. Oh, nation of origin is going to, for most of us, we were born here in the States, and so you just put USA or the United States. If you were born outside the country, then you would put the country that you were born in.
Love and happiness. Something that can make you do wrong, make you do right. Yeah. Love.
Love and happiness. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone. 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Talking about how she can make it right. Yeah. Happiness is when you really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong being in love with someone, yeah. Hey. Oh, baby, love and happiness.
Love and happiness.
Love and happiness.
Love and happiness.
Oh.
And for love. Each mistake, oh, you forgave, and soon both of us learned to trust.
I also recognize that this might be distracting for some of you. I was the kind of student that would have loved to be able to listen to music when I took a test. I felt like I would have done better in school, and I didn't do so well at times.
Listen up, y'all, cause this is it. The beat that I'm banging is delicious.
Burgalicious definition, make them boys go loco. They want my treasures so they get their pleasures from my boat. So you can see me, you can't squeeze me. I ain't easy, I ain't sleazy. I got reasons why I tease them. Boys just come and go like seasons. Burgalicious, but I'm
past the city limit sign, where there's a honky-tonk near the county line. The joint starts jumping every night when the sun goes down. They got whiskey, women, music, and smoke. It's where all the cowboy folk go to Bootskin Boogie. I got a good job. I work hard for my money. When it's quitting time, I hit the door running. I fire up my pickup truck and let the horses run. I go flying down that highway to that hideaway. Struck out in the woods to do the boot scoot boogie.
Okay, it would appear that most everyone is done, and if not, no worries. So now we're going to look at the social identity wheel, and what I'd like to have is some more people kind of share anything from the outer circle that you like, 2 or 3 items, and then also in the middle, I forgot to say, hopefully you looked at these, the identities that you think about most often, least often, the identities you'd like to learn more about, and then the identities that you have that identities that have the strongest effect on how you see yourself as a person. So choosing one of those questions in the middle, and then 2 or 3 of the items on the outer circle. Any volunteers?
The one I think about physical, emotional,
Okay. Okay, okay. So thinking about age and then also, okay. So there's also, would you also say that there's sometimes a challenge depending on, you know, the age of the person that you're dealing with and then kind of your own age and kind of how all that all fits together? Okay, okay, good. Anything else from the outer circle? Okay, not an issue. Don't think much about it. She says she doesn't often think about her sexual orientation. Okay, good. I'm a diversity trainer at heart, so forgive me. Haven't heard from any of the men in the room yet. I'm just observing that. So, and typically as men, we like to have the first and the last word, right? Until we get home, and then, like I know at home, I don't get the last word, but that's, they know. Anyone else want to share? Okay. 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 Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I know I'm from a very multiracial background, so I don't consider myself white as in white, but I'm a Heinz 57, so I'm saying dog, you know.
Right.
You've
got this little cute little dog and you're not sure exactly what it is, but he's the Heinz 57.
Right. Okay. Right, right. Anyone else identify with being sort of Heinz 57, right? And actually, if we all, and it doesn't matter how you look, if we studied our family lineage, then we would all most likely identify with that. And so even if you can say, well, if you look at me, you know, I look a certain way, you never know. And so that's why getting to know more about one another is really, really critical, because people may, I call it the airport theory. So when you walk around in the airport and you see people, you make judgments about them, and don't argue this. We make judgments about people, right? You know, you make judgments about the person that's running. Up, they must be late, right? And it's just instant. And we probably heard it from someone else, so no fault is given. But that person might have gotten off another flight that was delayed and is trying to make their connection. How many of you have dealt with that before? But I guarantee that when you were trying to get to that next plane because you didn't have a choice, most of the people that saw you hurrying across the area thought, oh, that person's late, should have got here earlier, right? So it's kind of that notion that when you walk around the airport, we make observations, okay, or judgments about people, and we don't know the background, we don't know the story. And so that's why, and even if you decide, well, I identify as American, or I am identified as a white person, when you get to know me more, I can tell you about more of this Heinz 57 that's going on in my family. And we think that that's very important, because when we do understand each other more, it helps us know and understand ourselves more, but also the other people that, again, we spend the majority of our time with during the work week. And it also translates to when you are interacting with people at home, in civic organizations, at church, or whatever place of worship that you attend. It starts to translate into those other areas, Southwest Ding, I'm sorry. It translates into those other areas as well. Okay, thank you. Anyone else before we move on? Okay, did anyone just not fill it out? I'm just seeing if someone will raise their hand. It usually doesn't happen. So another kind of closing point to the social identity wheel, and again, I'm happy to share this one as well. This is, how many of you thought this was a little more difficult than the personal identity wheel? Okay, it should be, because there are a lot of things on this outer circle that we don't think about often. I think in my work environment, I do think about gender, because in student affairs or higher education, the majority of the employees in my office are women. And so I do think about gender, especially when I mess up, right? But I don't think about my age very often because, well, let me, I'll take that back. College students are interesting. So 18, 19-year-old college students think that a 31-year-old is old. So I do think about age when they point it out. Or when I can't connect with what they're saying because the language is changing, it's different. And so for those of you that have that front counter traffic, you know, sometimes there's some, it's 100% English, but the phrases and the words and the slang and, you know, there might be some differences, okay? So there's something, I never think about first language. I thought about it when I traveled out of the country, and I was like, well, I can't go anywhere by myself because I'll be in trouble, right? So this is a little bit more difficult for one reason, because these are a lot of things that we don't think about, but also when we think about socioeconomic class, when we think about religion or spiritual affiliation, when we think about what's not on here is we think about maybe political identity, right? That's something that can send people to opposite sides of the room in 2 seconds. And so sometimes a social identity wheel or this type of activity is a little bit more difficult because there are some things that are absolutely at our core, kind of make us who we are. And talking about them is very difficult. Talking about them might be taboo. Talking about them might be something, oh, we don't do that here. We don't talk about that here. And I think a lot of times we do that so that we can kind of keep it nice and even. But if those are things that touch us at our core and make us who we are, I think it's important that we start to have those conversations around what makes us tick, right? So that we can learn a little bit more, again, about ourselves and about one another. Okay? Any closing questions or thoughts on the social identity wheel? Okay. Okay. How many of you have teenagers at home? Teenagers are awkward. We were there too. Really just awkward because they haven't found themselves and they're trying to develop their identity. And when you're a teenager, you're really trying to follow someone else's identity and develop that and kind of come into your own. So some of these things, I agree, I think are really important for us to talk about. And then again, if we use gender for an example, which actually we use that as an example later, there are a lot of things that men just don't want to talk about. And depending on, there's some men that may come up and they want to tell you their life story up to the front counter when you're working with them. But then there's other men that you're trying to ask some questions to understand the situation, and they just don't want to say anything, right? And that's a limitation that I think is learned. You know, we might say, well, that's in us, that's at my core, but I think it's something that's learned. And oftentimes we're not told to be emotional or to talk about emotional things, for example, okay? Was there another hand? Anything else? Questions, comments on the social or personal identity wheels? Okay, again, afterwards, I'll get a sheet of paper out, and if you want to leave me your email address, I'll be happy to, or a business card, I'll be happy to send these over to you. I told you I like quotes. A young child asks his mother why the man in the grocery store is so dark. Instead of answering, his mother tells him to be quiet, which tells the child it's not okay to talk about differences. I've gotten some feedback about this quote, and I think there are, you know, maybe some people that disagree with this. And this isn't necessarily sort of a tell-all, but I think this is an important point that oftentimes we, and I kind of mentioned this before, we want to kind of shush the conversation around certain issues. And so if a child is asking why someone is different and we shush them, right, at a young age, I would argue that I think it does tell them that it's not okay to talk about differences. And so I got ahead of myself a little bit. But that's what's important about dialogue. And that's what's important about having conversation, introducing new people, new concepts, new ideas to young people, because I think some of us are stuck and don't want to have conversations around certain areas, certain issues, because We were told at a very young age that that wasn't okay to talk about. I have a quick question. This is a new poll that I'm doing with this presentation. As I read the quote, or as you all saw it, how many of you that are willing to admit made the assumption that we were talking about a black person? I'm just curious. More hands should go up than normal. All right. I think oftentimes we kind of go there, and we think of race in a binary, black-white issues. That's it. That's all there is. Now, much of our country's history, current, past, hopefully not future, we're trying to work on it, and I think we're making some strides, but we get into this black-white race issue, and that's all that there is. And our country is much too diverse, and our issues are much too diverse for us to just kind of sort of sit there. And in most cases, most people think, when I read this quote, that we're talking about a black man in this scenario. So, teachable moment for us all. Okay, so we're going to start to speed up the presentation. I apologize because of the lighting. It may be a little bit difficult to see. I'm going to show two movie clips. It might be a little bit difficult to see, but the subtitles are there, and I think you'll get the gist of it. But how many of you have seen this movie before? What About Bob? Okay, it's a nice little comedy. It's pretty simple. Using this as a teaching tool, I think, will be helpful as we look at what the concept that he talks about in the movie Baby Steps. And so the context for these next two clips is really to look at the ways in which we can sort of move into being more culturally competent in our workspaces as well as in our lives by just taking short baby steps, again, instead of thinking magic wand, make everything better. Okay, there's a big difference between the two. So,
why don't I start?
Huh?
The simplest way to put it? I have problems. I worry about diseases, so I have trouble touching things. In public places, it's almost impossible. I have a real big problem moving.
Talk about moving.
As long as I'm in my apartment, I'm okay. But when I want to go out, I get weird.
Talk about weird.
Talk about weird. Well, I get dizzy spells, nausea, cold sweats, hot sweats, fever blisters, difficulty breathing, difficulty swallowing, blurred vision, involuntary trembling, dead hands, numb lips, fingernail sensitivity, pelvic discomfort.
So the real question is, what is the crisis, Bob? What is it that you are truly afraid of?
What if my heart...
I think that Bob is truly, the crisis is having that difficult conversation that I talked about earlier. And sometimes that could be around a diversity issue, an identity issue. It could be around having the first person that identifies as gay work in your office. It could be last November around the political elections in your town and how the employees in the workspace, you know, kind of showed up politically. It could be around how we feel about the war in Iraq. It could be a number of issues that make it really difficult for us to just talk and to have conversation. And in a lighthearted way, I think sometimes we get really, we have some of those same symptoms, I think, sometimes we have to sort of engage in a difficult conversation around cultural competency. You know, we might get really nervous. We might fumble over our words. We might get really quiet and distant. We might decide, I'll let everyone else talk about it. That's none of my business, or whatever the case may be. So that was kind of the gist of the first clip.
Ow. 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 Dr. Marvin, you can help me. For the first time in my life, I feel like there's hope. I feel like I can be somebody.
Bob, there's an old saying that the best psychiatrist in the world is the one right inside of you.
Yeah.
I can help you. Yes.
Thank you.
Bob, there is a groundbreaking new book that has just come out. Ah.
Now, his own book.
Not everything in this book, of course, applies to you, but I'm sure that you can see, when you see the title, exactly how it could help.
Baby steps?
It means setting small, reasonable goals for yourself, one day at a time. One tiny step at a time.
Baby steps.
For instance, when you leave this office, don't think about everything you have to do in order to get out of the building. Just think of what you must do to get out of this room. And when you get to the hall, deal with that hall, and so forth. You see?
Baby steps.
Baby steps.
Oh, boy. Baby steps. Baby steps. Baby steps through the office. Baby steps out the door. It works. It works.
So oftentimes, again, we think of diversity issues or needing to learn more about diversity issues as this really big, huge, expansive thing. And I think we struggle more to learn about ourselves and other people when we look at it that way. And so looking at small, manageable, reasonable goals, for us to learn more, for us to experience more, for us to challenge ourselves more, is something that's important. So what I'd like to do is have you all think about your work environments for a moment, and what are some baby steps that you all could take in your work environment to kind of look at cultural competency a little bit more. So what's something small or simple that you could do in your office, or that you're already doing in your office, that you'd be willing to share with everyone else to kind of work toward a more culturally competent environment at work? I heard some whispering. I hear some whispering. Anyone want to share? Never know how helpful something you might share might be to someone else. Okay. Okay. So every Monday, 30-minute open forum meeting. And the issues could range from how your weekend was to, you know, what's something at work that we want to accomplish. You probably end up talking about some difficult customer traffic a lot as well. And so 30 minutes out of our lives just to talk. And have you found it helpful and useful? This is just as an aside. With our struggling economy, and I know we're probably tired of hearing that, but when people are in a job and they don't want to be there, I move on. Because we have a lot of people that would like to come and work in your space. That's just my mind frame. And I have some people in my work environment that it's time for them to move on. I got someone on my staff. I won't say her name, but it's time for her to move on. Because she just doesn't come to work with the same energy that she used to. I think she's been there too long, and it's time to move on. And it's okay if you move on, Because it's also okay that we bring somebody else in that wants to come in and work and be a part of the team. So, yes. So there's a lot going on, and I think when we look at change in a work environment, and whether or not change is good, I think we would respond differently. Some of us don't like change very much. I think most of us struggle with change on some level, depending on what it is. Part of what you're saying, though, is when things kind of get flipped, turned upside down, we have to just kind of hold in the moment, appreciate our job, and go with the flow so that we can kind of stay on board. But I do know that for some of us in the room, maybe for a lot of us, that is really hard to do. And again, it depends on how long you were there, depends on if there's a system or a process that's changed that you developed yourself, and then nobody asked you, they just changed it. I mean, there's a lot of different things that could be going on there. But I think it's important for us to kind of try to be in the moment. And again, part of what I was saying as an aside is, it is a difficult time. And I have a lot of friends that went to school and got better degrees than I did, so to speak, engineering and law and all that kind of stuff, they're not working right now. And so it does. I think some things that happen in our lives, whether it's change that we like or change that we're struggling with, you know, it does make us appreciate our jobs a little bit more. But it's difficult because I think sometimes if there's too much change too fast, it's very hard for us to kind of stay on that bus. You know, I'll get off and walk. You know, sometimes we think that way. Okay? Anything else before we move on? Okay, y'all still awake? Y'all still with me? Okay, 10 more minutes, I'm done. All right? It'll go by fast. Part of what we want to look at as we move into the intent versus impact concept, which I'll introduce in just a second, is kind of our commitment. And so let's say you're in an office where a lot of change is happening. It's happening real fast. What's our commitment to appreciating our job, but also appreciating the work that other people do and bring to the table? And if you have someone that's dragging a little bit, what's our commitment to helping them along? You know, I think sometimes we're like, well, you just need to get your stuff together. Sometimes we need a little extra motivation. And you might be the motivator in your office. There's got to be someone who motivates you. Because motivating everyone else all the time gets old. Anyone identify with that? And so it's very important that when we say we're going to have a commitment to our work, and a commitment to cultural competence, that we're willing to do that for ourselves, but we're also willing to pick up and do that for other people. Okay? So here's this concept called intent versus impact. When I finish explaining it, you'll go, oh, Kyle, that's nothing new. But I think when we look at it in a different context, it'll be helpful. How many of you have been interrupted in conversation before? Hands up. Everybody's hand should be up. You probably just don't want to put it up. Because we've all been interrupted in conversation before. What are some of your reactions to when you're interrupted in conversation? Frustration. Angry. That's it? I'm frustrated and angry. How many of you get quiet? And it's, oh, I'm sorry. Nope, that's okay. You don't want to listen? I don't have nothing to say. Okay? So, oh, your husband, right? Right? Very, okay, so, and sometimes there's a lot of passive-aggressive. I like to say passive-passive. Because sometimes people, there's no aggression there. They're just passive about it, right? But we respond differently. But I think we know how it feels to be interrupted in conversation before. Anyone want to argue that? There's no time. How many of you have interrupted someone else in conversation before? Everyone's hand should go up. Whether intentionally or not, we have all done that, right? You come home with some exciting news. You're in conversation, you just don't want to forget something. Right? Or you have someone that's trying to tell you their life story, you don't want to listen to it, and I got to make this phone call real quick, or something like that. Anyone ever call themselves? I have a coworker, another aside, real quick. I have a coworker that when he's dealing with someone that he just doesn't have the energy for, he will pull out his cell phone and call his office number. I'm sorry, I need to get this. It's pretty funny. But it's kind of bad, too. But that's what he does. So if that's helpful to anyone, or if you have a friend across the way, you, like, give the signal, call my extension. All right. So we're going to introduce this concept called intent versus impact. The reason why I asked about how many of you interrupt others and how many of you have been interrupted, because at some point in our lives, we've all dealt with that. And at some point in our lives, we've all dealt with this next concept, intent versus impact. We're going to use gender as an example. This is going to go really quickly. We're going to look at gender, and we're going to talk about two groups, dominant and subordinate groups. In our culture in the United States, men are the dominant group. It's not fair or just. Typically, it shouldn't be that way, but that's the way it is. And women are the subordinated group. So follow my example. Men are dominant, women are subordinate. That was hard to say in a room full of women. Okay, when a dominant group member says or does something hurtful or inappropriate or in jest, their tendency is to explain their intent. And some of the examples that we hear is, I didn't mean it. It was just a joke. I didn't do it on purpose. You're being too sensitive. I didn't know. Shrug the shoulders. You know, it's kind of like, what's the big deal? All right? When a subordinate group member receives something disrespectful or harmful or oppressive or whatever from a dominant group member, the result or the impact is often, it often causes an adverse reaction and stops the dialogue. So when we are shut down, and again, when I asked how many of you, when you're interrupted, you just kind of shut down, no more conversation from me, that's kind of what I mean there. In our conversation with others, we also have to look at the other areas of our lives and look at how we can engage one another. So that can be broken down into this slide. Intent is the message that goes out from someone in a dominant space. It could be a supervisor. It could be a judge. It could be your parents or an aunt or an uncle. Somebody that has some sort of dominance over you in terms of role, in terms of identities or whatever. And so sometimes those messages go out with the best intentions. No ill will. No one ever told me. But all of that doesn't matter in this scenario. Because when we look at the impact, the message that was received in our response or our reaction to how we receive a message, sometimes we say, this is my life, yet again. It's part of our story. And sometimes people send out that message with the worst intentions. So they mean to be harmful. Okay? So the point for this is, most of us in our dominant space, a manager, a male, an American citizen dealing with someone who is not, whatever the case may be, we sometimes send out intentional messages. I want us all to go home thinking about sometimes how those messages may be received by others. So when we look at now being interrupted and interrupting people in conversation, this concept hopefully will make a little bit more sense. How many of you have been in a space where you've had a manager, a supervisor, a judge, a parent, a teacher, whatever, send out a message that you received in a way that was different than what was intended? Okay? So most of us have dealt with that, whether we can think of an example or not. We also have to remember, though, that sometimes we're here. We're the ones that are sending out intentional messages. And so when we think about our customers, when we think about people that come into our offices that we are here to serve, we have to remember and think about our language and think about the intent of our language, the intent of our actions or inactions, the intent of our nonverbals, the intent of pulling out your cell phone or winking at someone to call your extension so you can say, ooh, I need to take this call, right? We have to think about those things that we do intentionally that may have a different impact on someone else. Okay. Any questions about that or any comments or anything anyone want to add to this? Does this make sense? It's happened to us all, right? But when we think about cultural competency, what I'm saying is we have to remember that so we don't walk into a person that looks Hispanic or Latino and automatically assume that they're of Mexican descent, like I gave that example earlier. Or we don't assume that a new employee that starts work in our office that's only been there for 2 months and is 23 and fresh out of college, that we don't think that they can't do their job. because we've been here for 15 years. That on the flip side, that we don't think that someone that's been in our office for 25 years can't deal with change. So a lot of times we do these things where our intentional messages go out, and we do them without understanding the impact that it'll have on someone else. Okay? So for my concluding thoughts, cultural competence involves everyone. Because when we understand that diversity is about people and their experiences, we all are a part of that. So what do we do at work to show that we value everyone? How do we communicate with the people that we work with how we like to be valued? I think recognition is super, ultra important in the work environment. We have to find as many ways and as many creative ways to recognize ourselves and each other in the workplace as much as possible. How do we show up for one another? So that person that's dragging a little bit needs a little extra motivation. Do we just leave them on the side? Or do we do little things here and there to help motivate them? It could be taking that person out to lunch. Getting them out the office. They always bring their lunch. You know what? TV dinner aside, it's lunchtime. Bad joke. Let's go out for lunch, all right? Baby steps to, I'll make sure people are awake. Baby steps to cultural competency. You don't have to just fix everything, but do some small, manageable goals to kind of get to that point. And be willing to step up and tell your story. The more we know about others means the more we know about ourselves. I hope there's an evaluation in your binder somewhere. I think feedback is important. It's the only way that I can get better. I thank you all for your time. I want to thank TMCEC once again for inviting me out, and I hope you all enjoy the rest of your conference.
Thanks, Kyle. Thanks for coming out, joining us from Austin. Always enjoy your presentation. You've got one more for me to do this year, right? On my two? All right. We're almost at the end of our academic year. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a 15-minute break, and we'll see you back here at 15:45.